And Axang, welcome everybody. This is BMBO Weekly. It is 25th of May. 25th of May 2020. Well, these days feel like nothing. It's a Monday, It's a Monday again. So if nothing
else. It's 27th of something.
Yes. 25th of May, Monday. And this is episode 85 of the BMP Weekly. In BMP Weekly, we talk about the Microsoft 365 areas, not just the development, but also in other areas, but focus mainly on the development side, so to say, not just development. But anyway, across the Microsoft 365 platform. My name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint platform team. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. And let's jump
in. Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Mastegat. I am head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest.
Yes,
from
we do.
Graz in Austria, Stefan Bisser. Welcome.
Hi. Hey. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep, no problem. How was the...
This is so well prepped
and organized.
How about a few words about yourself? What do you do? Who you are? What is your kind of niche in the Microsoft cloud?
It's not a niche. Come on.
It was a niche. So
that's true.
In my day job, I'm a technical lead at a company called Solvion, and I'm kind of like the glue between project management and the engineers there. And apart from that, I'm doing, I guess, pretty long now, 3 years or something. I'm highly interested in all things conversational AI. I'm a MVP in the AI area, focusing on the bot framework and all of the conversational platforms. I'm happy to be here today.
Cool.
Excellent. Let's actually drill in right on that one, because I still remember back in, when was it, 4 years? 5 years or whenever it was, we were actually in Austria, in Vienna. We did a keynote for Microsoft 365. What was it? SharePoint, European SharePoint conference.
Yes,
and in the keynote, we were provisioning modern SharePoint sites using a iPhone. Well, basically talking to a Siri, and then that was a bot actually behind of the scenes and all of that. And it's been now 4 years, I think, from that, if I remember. Is it already being used and the bot framework, or is it still a promise of the future? So what's your kind of a take on bot framework and adaption from a customer perspective?
Yes, it's definitely been used. They showed some numbers at Build recently. They have like more than 100,000 active bots per day. Quite a lot of verticals are adopting those things, especially like healthcare these days and insurance companies and so on. And I guess, as you mentioned, 4 years is a long time. Back then, you had like not that sophisticated development models behind behind the framework and stuff like that. So you could like do like basic bots, but nowadays you can have them in Alexa, Google Assistants, and something. It's really easy to build them. So the gap for building a bot is actually not that high as it was back then.
And basically 100,000 bots used daily, was it, from a usage perspective, which by the way makes sense. I think the whole of the cards and questions and all of that, the UX advantages which and improvements have a massive impact on this one. So are you seeing then customers also asking about more and more bots from your perspective?
Yeah.
And is it only for integrating with Teams, or what or do we have other scenarios?
I'm not really trilling on
this one, sorry.
Not only. Of course, Teams is like the platform. If a customer already has Office or Microsoft 365 deployed and they use Teams, that's the first channel you want to deploy your bot to. But also, the cool thing here is you can build your bot once and then have it in Teams and the same bot in WebChat. So you can integrate it in SharePoint online intranets, or you can have it on your public-facing websites, or even in your, I don't know, car or coffee-making machine or whatever. So I guess, of course, Microsoft customers who have adopted Teams, they will certainly want to use it in Teams, but also the others, like vendors who want to place them on their public-facing websites, they can still do the same with that.
Yeah. So when a company wants to start their adventure with bots, like what is the first scenario they look into?
Q&A, definitely. Q&A, because that's the most easiest way to do it. It's not that sophisticated.
Hey, kid, how do I do X?
Yeah, yeah. That's the starting thing, because it's not a lot of effort to put into to build your Q&A bot. And you certainly have something you can show your management or your customers quite easily, and then go from there and do like dialogue management and all those sophisticated tasks afterwards.
And is it, do you see that folks are actually okay talking to their phone, computers, or do they type mostly when they interact with a bot?
The thing is, it's different between, let's say, cultures, you know, especially here in Austria, users, they are like a bit of afraid to talk to a machine because it's something they don't know yet.
Weird.
And therefore, they try to at first hand type with the bot, because in our country the problem with the accent comes in as well. So if you speak like an accent, you will have a hard time communicating with a bot. Whereas if you speak perfect Oxford English or whatever, the bot will understand you more easier. So that's like the missing piece from a speech perspective, to have like all these dialects and stuff like that covered as well.
So the bots you build, are they in English or are they in the language that the customer use in their work?
So we usually do either or both. So we use for some customers we build German only bots, whereas for some others who are multinational orgs, we build multilingual bots, because it's not a problem to use, let's say, Bing speech translator or something to really have that kind of translation in there to easily build a multilingual bot.
Yeah. That is cool, right? Because like that probably wasn't there 4 years back when the whole thing would start, right? Which is why you would have like very limited set of the things you could ask, and then replies you would get, right? Because it would be very narrow set of words, vocabulary, if you like, to which the bot could react, right?
Yeah, true.
The beauty of also with the bots is that they're hosted in Azure, so you have access on all of the good and goodness and everything in Azure, absolutely. Now, I have to come back on the voice recognition, because I still remember when we did the keynote demo. That was like I said, it was 4 years ago, and it's evolved tremendously from that moment. But we had a problem. There was a scripted story, which we were doing within the bot, and then we were trying to get the computer to recognize Paolo, because Paolo Pialorsi was one of the persons in the keynote, but there's no way to get that right.
There is. It just need to be based on voice, but on visual camera.
Yeah, that's true. Paolo.
That would work exactly. Like, give me the sight, and then it would work.
But in our script within it, we were talking to the bot, and then, well, of course, this can be also done using a typing, and then we typed the Paolo's name on it. Nobody noticed that there was a problem with the voice voice recognition. But anyway, so things have evolved absolutely from that moment. And at that time, there was no templates, no starting points, no. It's really hard to actually start doing stuff. I think there was a Visual Studio project template which you needed to download and install manually. So it wasn't even
I mean, by itself, like, that is already thin, right? Right. Imagine you had to do the whole thing in assembly. Like, that would be hard.
yeah, exactly. It's a natural thing in IT. Abstraction layers are. Well, we're adding.
Yeah, just more press F5 and it works,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. So, and nowadays you get a nice example template. I think web chat the control isn't that evolved quite significantly as well. So it can show cards and all of that. So you don't have to actually write that stuff by yourself, which is really really cool.
Yeah.
Did we have any cool announcements in the build last week related on bot framework?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, 4 years ago, you really had to be a developer. Nowadays, what they did is they launched a new tool called Bot Framework Composer, where you could actually build your bot using a UI. So it's I like to compare it to the Power Automate UI, where you have your actions and triggers and stuff like that. You could do this basically the same within Composer, or PVA has the same UI. You just drag and drop your things in, model your dialogues, and you're good to go.
Yep.
And
nice. So
now they really close the gap between developers and let's say power users, because the power user could start the bot in Composer and then hand it off to a developer to do the more sophisticated tasks with C#, Node.js, whatever.
So what is the limit? Like, how far can you come with the Composer? Like, do you come to using services, doing auth? Like, how far can you come until you will need a dev?
So with Composer, you can basically model all the dialogues. You can even integrate with APIs. You can call APIs. You can do authentication with it. But what you can't do at the moment is like channel specific functionality. So let's say how Teams, for example, handles all this kind of members added and let's say conversation update activities, those are not part of the Composer. So if you want to have like custom actions for that, you would need to have a dev building that. But apart from that, you can build your whole dialogue trees and your whole conversation flow within Composer.
That is pretty
That's
cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. No, but it's like it's this interesting shift, right? That we see more and more and more across the board, especially on Microsoft Cloud, where the things that in the past were available only to pro devs are more and more available or exposed to power users non-professional dev audiences, right? So we have, as you said, we have Power Automate, Power Apps, we have now Composer for Bots, and probably there will be more and more of these things available, basically to allow the business to solve the problems that they have themselves and only tap into the dev capacity that they have for specific things like, I need a connector for this, or we need to expose our LOB, or we need to tie two things together that aren't meant to talk to each other, right? So like very technical things, but everything else is just like there should be no need for a user to need developer for everything, right?
Yeah. And that's definitely the Power Platform objective, and then in other areas as well, because then that enables normal end user to be more successful and more powerful in their work. But then that's actually an interesting discussion point as well, that what does that do then for the partner ecosystem? Wouldn't that then impact negatively on the partner ecosystem opportunities? Or how do you see this, both of you, actually, on that side?
Stefan.
So as Microsoft partner are mainly focusing on like the consulting piece, you still need to have a partner who actually trains the customer to do certain tasks. You need to introduce certain tools to your customers and give them also, let's say, some kind of kickstarting ideas with it. Because if you just hand them over the Composer tool, they certainly won't know what to do with that and what's already possible with that. So you would, as a partner, I guess you would need to focus more on how to make customers adopting those tools and also allowing them to spread the ideas which tasks they can fulfill with those tools. I guess that's kind of what the customers partners should do.
I think that in a way it raises the bar. Right, I think it nicely fits the model to empower everybody to do more, and basically it allows the customer to be self-sufficient, and because they can do so much, everybody who is more skilled can do other more interesting things, as opposed to just, you know, like reinvent the wheel, do the basics over and over again, because already that was so hard in the past. So I think that with these tools becoming commodity, all of that can be done by, in a way, everybody. And then the more advanced scenarios that are really value add for a customer, like these are the advanced things with which we pro dev audience and people who are really experts in their field can assist them with.
Yeah.
But would that then mean that there's a clear transition in the partner ecosystem where people should be investing and focusing on as well? Or is there?
I guess so, yeah.
Hard questions.
No.
Because if it's value adds, then it's not the primary, let's say, intranet like it used to be. At the same time, it's not like in decades ago you were actually setting up mainframes just to do a basic operations, and still the partner ecosystem is growing all the time. So
I guess it is still both, right? I think that just the fact that something becomes commodity doesn't mean that everybody knows it directly from the start. So, and every day, like in everything else, there is more people who are novice, who are new to something that folks who are expert. So I think that as a partner, you will have this two-step approach where one, as you said, Stefan, like you need to educate them, explain the basic, what it is, what is available, how to use that. And once they will start doing that, at that point, you can step away from that and then offer them the more advanced things, right? So like, it's not like you will only need the advanced stuff, because I think it will still take quite some time until everybody grasps everything that is available now and says, like, yep, I get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, coming back on the 4 years since the bot framework from a moment, and then the adoption curve are now kind of a firing and being used more and more.
An interesting thing, right? So there'll be like having the tools that we have today, would Vesa be able to build the bot by himself?
Sure.
Sounds like he's a PM, he does some code, but...
Sounds like a challenge.
Yeah. So I think I wrote the original bot, which was provisioning the stuff and modern sites back in the 4 years ago. So I can probably do that still. So that's fine.
You would still be able to do it.
Yes, exactly. Good. If you think about what would be our recommendation, Stefan, if somebody is looking into now getting started on the bot framework, where do people should get started? So who are the people to follow? Of course you, but then who are the other people and what's happening in the, how to tap into the bot framework community?
So there are two things here. First of all, if they really want to start, learn the basics of the bot framework, I guess, the docs have pretty good articles on what a bot actually is and how the overall architecture behind the bot framework and within the bot framework SDK looks like. So they should learn about what is a dialogue and so on and so forth, how to handle language understanding. And if they really want to do, let's say, hands-ons, they could either use the samples the bot framework team has provided. I guess they have more than 60 samples for different kind of bot use cases out there. And what I would definitely recommend is to follow also the bot builder community. That's a community organization we run on GitHub, where a couple of other folks are in there as well, managing the whole stuff. We have a lot of samples out there. Gary Pretty has a lot of decent videos to follow, especially on how to build bots and how to handle all, let's say, activity types and so on. So I would start from there and then just use the samples, because if you use them, you will get to know how the things work behind the curtains.
Yeah.
Cool.
The hands-on is always the key. I think it's in everything. If it's learning into using Microsoft Graph or SPFX or creating web applications for Teams, the hands-on experience, going step by step and a kind of a really understanding. Okay, now I got it, and then going further on the and deeper on the learnings as well. So absolutely. Should we jump for the articles for a while and then come back on the discussion?
Let's do that.
So we have a lot of news last week from Microsoft, obviously because of the build. And there is already the on-demand sessions are available. So did either one of you already watch all of them during weekend?
Yes, all of them.
Okay.
All of them. Up to date.
648,
I know everything about sessions. Nothing. Yes,
exactly. Well, in US, it's a long weekend, so you might be able to actually hit the 648. No, never mind. I think there was a lot of good sessions, a lot of good messaging here. And one of the interesting part also is always to see how do we position stuff as well. So I'm sure if you're a developer, you might be interested only on technical things. But then it's really interesting to also watch some of the stuff like Russia's keynote on, okay, how do we position? How do we tell the story of what this is all about? And for example, well, Russia is in my organizational chain and reports to Satya, so pretty high on the organization. So really high in the organization. But that's a good session on understanding what's the value add on the Microsoft 365, as an example. So if somebody's watching on that one. Did any of you have any favorite sessions from Build? Something which really kind of like, that was brilliant. Obviously, Scott had awesome jokes and awesome things, which were noted quite widely in the internet. But any preferences from your side?
Stan?
Yeah, I, of course, as a bot lover, I had the session, I loved the session from Darren Jefford, is his name, around conversational AI and virtual assistant. Because there, I guess it's 30 minutes long, and he covered all the news and bits and pieces around conversational AI platform with Composer, and with all the things they announced. So that was kind of cool to see that. And there was another session focusing on how, let's say, power users could build bots with the Power Virtual Agent, which actually has also some connections to the Bot Framework SDK. So that's pretty cool.
And that's interacting. Yeah, that's really cool stuff as well. What about you, Waldeck? Something which caught your mind?
So I think the thing that I liked the most was the dev keynote overview of the different things across the board, like the static web apps, GitHub, code spaces.
Yeah,
I think it was
cool.
in Enhancements keynote. Yeah. Yep. There was a really good, quick-paced overview, or like really impressive stuff. And then, especially when you think about like how you can use that in practice, like the ability to review a PR, just like, okay, I want to check this piece of code, or like imagine samples that we have, right? So yep. We have over 100 samples for SPFX in web parts, right? Roughly
more than 100.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right, and like we gather them over the course of years, right? So yep. Some of them are still on SPFX 1.1, some of them are on 1.10. Imagine you want to try it. Well, you need to clone the whole repo and then find the sample, install dependency. Like, yep. It's and quickly an hour long exercise. Whereas here you can just click a button, code, and you will start it directly, right? Yeah. So,
I think there was a special sessions on the GitHub GitHub. Advantages and the new
code,
stuff
somewhere spaces, in here yeah. as well.
Anyway, so now we're talking about individual sessions way too much because we have quite a few articles. So, what else? What's new on the Microsoft Teams platform? So, obviously, Microsoft Teams is a really big focus area in the Build. So there was supposed to be a SharePoint conference, and obviously, Microsoft Teams is the one which we're promoting now heavily as the primary access point to everything what you do in the work, including bots and all of that stuff. But a lot of cool stuff. In here, like Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code extensions to preview, so improvements on that side, making things easier to develop, and providing additional set of tools on top of the existing Yo Teams and a few other things. A lot of investments on Power Platform integration, App Studio updates, and additional things, additional settings, and streamlined app submission workflows. Oh yeah, so. Easily submit stuff to be available and control the stuff from the admin side. Really, really cool stuff. I think the custom templates was a really cool thing as well. So people can actually now build real Microsoft Teams templates. And then this is, well, I can say this one is going to be widely used more and more. And a lot of additional improvements as well. So single sign-on, making it easier for the people to use and consume and all of that stuff. So really, really cool cool stuff. Now, on the Graph API side, this one was a good announcement last week as well. So my Graph to-do API, so creating tasks for yourself. And in I know that Waldeck already tested this one out. What's your feelings on the usage? Well, it's Graph API. It just works, of course.
Exactly. Well, yes, right. So currently today, it's not yet in docs. I think it will come fast, yeah. Right? Because the API is exposed and works. It's already in the docs, or it's not yet in docs. It's not exposed in the endpoint that the data. So there is no easy way to see how it works, but it works, right? So once you know how to create a list or a task, like, it's great because now you can just like really easily create a task for yourself, as opposed to always have to go to a plan where a plan is really a group thing. So yep. In here, yep. You can easily create your own task. And we actually have just today updated one of the samples that we have with creating a reminder for yourself using this new API. So that has already yep. proved that it works, right? So yep. If you want to see absolutely. It in action, check out a sample.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So really cool stuff on that side. And like you said, it's not in the past we were creating tasks to the planner, but now you can actually create tasks to yourself, which makes perfect sense. So like yeah. It should be much more usable thing. And the API organization Microsoft Graph and Build 2020, a lot of new improvements on the Graph side as well. And the Graph services are coming. So there's a lot of investment. And again, trying to figure out how do we make it more easier for people to consume and use stuff as well. So really, really cool stuff as well on this side. What's new on the Microsoft Teams Build Edition? I think this is the duplicate from the pretty close to duplicate. It's not exactly the duplicate, which is
correct.
So this is basically also the non-development stuff, which is getting mentioned here, because there's more flow, power apps or power user stuff in that. And this is from the Teams blog, mm-hmm. but it's mentioning some of the same topics as which were mentioned in the dev perspective as well.
Yeah.
So really cool stuff as well. Now, that one, there's an explicit blog post, an article related on creating Teams quickly with templates and a nice YouTube video as well on that one. So people can actually check it out. Really, really powerful stuff. And you can create channels and settings and all of that stuff. So really, really cool. Microsoft Lists was announced
yes.
last week. Any feelings on that one? First impressions.
So my first idea was like, okay, so how is it being used? Like what do I use it yeah. for? Is it my personal to-do list or something? And then that was Omar Shaheen who shared a number of examples how he uses Lists in his work. And I think that is like really interesting and inspiring thing to know, right? So he presented it as a personal null database. Like basically yep. your low-level personal database in SharePoint or in a list.
In a list, yes. Yeah. Or in yep. the list app, is it because it's Microsoft Lists? Then you go to the Microsoft List, you don't actually go to the SharePoint, which is a pretty big difference. Even though
yes.
the SharePoint correct. Is the backbone where everything is being stored.
Yes.
So
you will have lists in your Microsoft List. You will have Microsoft List, right?
Yes.
And they will be used in Teams.
Yeah, exactly. I think we got that the list from a Teams, so it's super clear. Yeah. So, because you can
and then
well,
to get the list of your Microsoft list, you.
But then you can actually also use your use lists in your sites in your site collections, right? Sites. Anyway, we're good at this.
Totally not confusing.
Not at all. Not at all. Super clear. And now live from Microsoft Home Sites is basically now G8, so that's now out. And DC Butter is the BM on that one. So basically, we can now have a one site, at least for now. In the future, maybe multiple sites, which are being set as your home location. It could be the root of the tenant. It could be the whatever site collection. And then you can absolutely expose this one inside of Teams as well, and we'll get more documentation on that one later. Updates to SharePoint default site teams coming June 2020. So we are moving from a SharePoint perspective to teal in the default theme.
Goodbye blue, speed. Welcome teal.
Yeah, goodbye blue, welcome teal. But basically all of the new sites which is getting created by default will use the teal. So some people might have a lot of preferences on using the blue, but now it goes to teal, and obviously
it's
you can modify.
Been with us for a long time, right?
Yeah, that's true. The blue has been there. SharePoint blue was a thing. So Absolutely. Build support for open source, your build support for open source in your organization.
Correct.
You actually, Waldeck, you mentioned this one, but basically it's nice article and guidance on how you could start using the open source and how you can build stuff in the open source way in the organization.
Exactly. And also, like, what are different things that you have to take into account before you use? So things like licensing. Do you have staff? Do you understand whether a project that you want to use is being maintained? Is it backed by a company or a person? Like, all the different things that you have to take into account in order to ensure that whatever you use is not going to break without you knowing that, right? So Basically ensuring, like, having an SLA on things.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So we have pretty strict rules on the Microsoft side on the different permissions and things and licenses and all of that to avoid any legal issues on stuff getting used. So
yeah.
But good that we're sharing these kind of learnings as well. Now, Build 2020 Conversational AI Updates. We talked about this with Stefan. This
DLGR. One
was very pretty. And basically, Composer GA. So that's almost like building a fluid, flows. And then What is it? What's the come on, what's the Azure? Logic apps. So
logic apps, yeah.
But Framework SDK, Azure Bot Service, Virtual Assistants, pretty cool stuff getting released as well. Build is a big announcement day for all of these organizations, so they're always targeting on Build on those things.
Yeah.
Now, on top of those 648 videos which were released in Build, there was also videos which were not part of the Build, let's say, the broadcasting. And these are basically 39 videos on Microsoft Build skilling sessions.
Nice. Sessions. Yes.
And all of that is available in the Microsoft 365 Developer YouTube channel. So you can actually then find them available from here, apparently being grouped strangely. So I would actually go in here. We can probably see, there's the 39. And then those have been split in a different ways. And really cool stuff as well. So super, super cool.
And I guess, if I'm not mistaken, also post Build, there's something like Learning TV by the same group, right? So it was directly after Build that would start another set of videos, instructions for devs to ramp up their skills.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So plenty of videos to watch, if nothing else. Then in here, we are in bizzer.io. Want to talk about, Stefan, what this one is all about? From last week, Tuesday.
Yeah. So what I did is I built a bot for our very own company. And I was focusing on Teams messaging extensions quite a bit. And what I did is I also used the To-Do API, the beta API, to actually handle task management either in To-Do or Planner via messaging extensions. So what I did here is I did a whole walkthrough on how to create a bot using the messaging extensions and stuff like that, because it's pretty limited in terms of documentation. The authentication is a bit tricky. So you need to
Always off, right?
You need to have a couple of things in place to actually make that work.
Yeah.
And we will never know.
And we will never know.
On that bombshell.
Let's wait for him to come back.
Are you back?
Stefan.
Time we lost out. You. Time out.
We lost you for a minute. 20 seconds.
you lost me. Okay.
Yeah. You but talk about. Now you're back. And so for the messaging extensions, and then we pretty much lost you on the documentation on authentication being tricky.
Okay. So summing up, the blog post deals with a complete walkthrough on how to create a bot with messaging extensions, and then at the end, you will be able to actually click the ellipses from a Teams or group conversation and then create a task from there. So it's pretty convenient to actually do the task management then right within Teams without the context switching.
Yeah.
Now that we talk about the personal tasks, have you ever created a bot that allows you to remind you about a message? Like type like slash remind me in hour or in 2 hours or tomorrow.
There is a bot available in the Teams App Store. I guess it's called Remind Me or something.
Okay.
Where you could just have like at remind me, and then you set the timer and it will remind you after the timer about that specific conversation.
Cool. Okay. And reminder is then still in Teams, right? It's not creating a task in elsewhere. Okay, cool. Cool.
No. Good. Then other stuff, CLI had a new version coming out as well, Valdek.
Yes, every week, multiple times a week, we share now whatever is new. Over the last few days, we spent some time improving the AAD part of CLI, which is around granting additional scopes to service principles, so all targeted about making it easier to use CLI with a managed identity. That is one, and two, a huge thing. So as you probably know, with CLI you can upgrade your SPFX project from one version to another. Now we have introduced a new report type based on Code Tour. So that is an extension in VS Code that gives you a visual pointer in each file, like go to this line and in this line change this. Yeah. And basically step by step, it opens the file, goes to the right line of code in each file, making it really visual for you, like what needs to be changed where. So this is now in preview, and we'll be improving that with additional features and options. And it even goes to the point where you can just click the fix that we offer, and then it will run. And then if we can run a command on that. So install a package, click and install. Like, so it's already going that far. So this is like exciting stuff that we have now.
Because that will help then on upgrading absolutely the SPFX solutions and potentially other solutions in future. Who knows where this will be extended. So it is all open source.
The sky is the limit, right? And I mean, the scope is still M365. So like everything is there. Who knows? Maybe we'll offer something for bots.
Yeah, you never know.
Why not?
Now, a few other additional articles. Some Sidhart had again an article, Microsoft Teams operation SPFX webpart using Graph API. So basically just showing how to operate with Graph API and SPFX webpart, SPFX being the UX layer and then hitting and hosting that in Teams was the scenario. And then creating operations based on the or using the Graph APIs for that. So pretty cool example and showing how to get access on things. So really, really cool stuff. Now, this one is an interesting discussion point. There's two of this actually related to Microsoft Teams SPFX personal app configuration. And this really relates on the fact that if you have a personal application in Teams, personal application don't have a configure option. They do have settings if it's implemented based on the design guidance, but you have to implement the settings. And correct. That's really the big thing to understand here. And this one is from Robert, related on different options and where would I store these and what are the different storage locations. You could create a list, for example, in a root site or in a your personal site or OneDrive, and then use BNB.js for easily manipulating that list and storing information. And funny enough, this is really a coincidence. Paolo had a exactly the same video already recorded. So basically, where is it? He's talking about the Teams tab configuration and how those can be done. It's not actually about the personal. I think he's mentioning the personal in the video, but I can't remember where it was. But really, really, good to see that more and more people are giving guidance on this side as well. What about you, Stefan? In the Solvian case, do you build tabs in the Microsoft Teams?
Personal
applications.
Do. Yeah, we do. We have how is it called? A floor map built as a tab using SPFX. So one of my colleagues did that for our new office because we moved office. Now it's already more than a year ago, but back then he did that to visualize who sits where and what's the Teams availability of that kind of person. And we also have that as a Teams integrated app as well.
Yeah.
And we also plan to do like food ordering as Teams applications. So you could order your favorite food for lunch right within Teams.
Yeah,
at home, right?
at home, yeah.
So related on that discussion, actually, just out of curiosity, in your company, are you then preferring creating the Azure web applications and hosting them there or SPFX? What's the decision point from your side?
So as we have, I guess now 7 devs working on SharePoint development almost all the time, I guess we will certainly use SPFX in most cases. But Tommy Gulles, he is now looking into running the whole thing in Blazor as well, just to test it out and then host it as a, for instance, Azure Static Web App. We're kind of in the testing phase of that.
He's actually going to do a live demo on that one in this Thursday's community call. So it's pretty cool.
So by then it'll be already done, right? And shipped.
Yes. So he Let's has hope. 3 days.
T minus, no pressure.
Yes.
The world is watching.
Cute. This one is from Mike Hummel. Function components and hooks bring it all together, and a nice blog post related on different options and guidance again on implementing things using the React hooks, which seems to be now the track of the week, so to say. at some point, it was Angular Elements, then it was React, and then now it's React hooks, and it's just
it's a new thing, and everybody wanna try and see how it works, and everybody has their perspective on it and opinion, which is good, right? Because it helps others to understand, start, wrap their head around it, and like, this is good.
Absolutely. And there's always advantages and disadvantages, but in the React hook case, I think it's a matter of preference. How do you want to implement stuff rather than preference of the person who implements. This is from Shao Mendes. Shao. Did I say it right? Maybe.
Wow.
There we go. I just can't get it right. So add external user to Office 365 group programmatically. And again, and walking through the process and how to do that and implementing stuff in this time in console. Azure Function. Yeah. So making things happen and adding users then to the group as well. Now, that one we didn't go through last time. So working with Office 365 CLI and JSON parameters. Did we go this through? From
I don't think.
Yannick. I don't think so, we did. We missed it.
No.
Because it came out on Monday, but we missed it in the last week's episode. But basically, just definitions and guidance on how to work with the JSON parameters when you're using CLI. So.
Yeah, the whole trick there is that because you can use CLI in PowerShell, in Bash, in command line, there are in every shell requires different way to escape strings and quotes, and that is actually what makes it hard, right? So he went through all of that, all the hoops to find out, okay, like for this shell, for this OS, how do I need to escape my quotes and strings? And this is basically the article for that.
Makes sense. And then the last article, a lot of articles this week. Well, a lot of Microsoft stuff definitely this week as well. Why is that over there? Go away. There we go. From John Klein, what's included in the preservation hold library in SharePoint? So not a development topic definitely, but more on the how the behind of the scenes. The
records
preservation library
management
and the records management, which is an area where we'll see definitely more and more investments from Microsoft side as well. Now the project Cortex is out, we'll see more automation, artificial intelligence, and that stuff heading here as well. So really, really cool stuff.
And also new APIs, right? Because there will be new APIs for that too.
Yes, there will be. There will be. For the project Cortex, there's the new graph APIs for the taxonomy services and then content types with the graph or graph APIs for those. For the content type, this is actually the first set of APIs where we will start seeing things which are not available in the classic SharePoint APIs, which is really cool. because this pushes then people to the craft side, which is absolutely the right way to do it, because then you can hit the whole craft surface. But it's an interesting, now we are finally on the tipping point where we start seeing new APIs only on craft rather than in the classic SharePoint side.
But that makes perfect sense, and yeah. In a way, it's weird that it took us so long, right? Because like, if you think about it, like more and more, when we build things, you build a bot, but that bot doesn't do anything by itself. It needs access to your calendar. From that, maybe it needs to have access to
business data,
invitees.
Whatever.
Maybe from there, it is like, so it needs to go through the number of different nodes that are stored in Exchange, in your AD, in SharePoint, and whatever. Like in a past, that would be like 5 different endpoints to authenticate by itself. And Graph simplifies all of that, right? Yeah. And SharePoint was probably the only odd duck, right, that had like really its own scope of like everything that we do is in here. And sure, we have the access to sites and lists and files, but everything else is not in there yet, right? So it's great to see that finally with Cortex. And I think it makes, for that particular thing, it makes perfect sense, because yet again, it will be something that ties together, at least the way I see it, that ties together all the different nodes that we have available in a graph already. It brings them into one central place into which you can tap. And for that, you need to be able to move from A to B across different nodes, right?
So it makes
perfect sense.
And then, and why does it take such a long time? One of the reasons simply is that at the same time, we in SharePoint, well, first of all, SharePoint is a 2-decade-old product. Like in Microsoft Teams, there is no alternatives. There's only Graph API or Planner. There's only Graph API. That's it. Yeah. SharePoint is originally from on-premises, so it has the API surface. But then if you think about the new features, the UX features in SharePoint sites, and the feature crew who concentrates on the first party experiences can just make stuff faster available if they concentrate on just enabling stuff in the native REST API. Because from their perspective, their primary objective is to make the first party as best as possible. But then that has a impact on the third party, which has then the classic debate on where is this API? Why isn't that in Graph? Why is it in here? Why are we doing this and that?
Yeah.
So, but what related on the API surface, related on this gap as well. So we did publicly last week actually already noted that we will release the .NET standard version of CSAM pretty soon, which is it's a good thing, but then it's a bad thing as well, because obviously if in the best case scenario, we would have 2,000 people to throw into this one, and all of those APIs which are in CSAM would be exposed in Graph, and voila, you can access all of that data using gem.net's core. But that's not reality, because yes, we potentially, we're making profit, but it's no point of throwing 2,000 people on it. So it's gradual churning. But this one will then enable you to use the CSAM in the .NET core until the needed APIs are available in Graph. So, which is good. That's a really good thing.
And I guess like at the end of the day, it makes perfect sense, right? Because if you would give people the money and ask them, okay, you have so much to spend. Do you want to see Cortex or do you want to see the same APIs on Graph?
Yeah.
The answer is simple, right? New APIs on Graph, right?
It's the super simple and decision-making factor. Basically, is that how many new people and accounts or E5 subscriptions we will get if we invest this amount of money in here versus that one? Because that ultimately, that's how the decisions are done. It's all about
product that you have to sell. It's
exactly.
as simple as that.
Yeah, yeah. It's
so
really
will we see CSAM behind E5? Because that would solve
E7.
All your problems.
E7 then.
I'll bypass this suggestion to Jeff Tepper, and we'll see what happens. So
probably it will be something like. Bad idea.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, I think that's it for now. I think we're running on the hour as well. So thank you, Stefan, joining us. Any last words? What are you planning to do this week? Anything interesting on your table?
work.
Yeah, I'll be working from home at least. So.
Yeah.
Still, again.
Well, like anything interesting from your side?
We are, well, so at the end of the week, we're going to ship new version of CLI. And that version, and that is really cool, that version, if all is well, fingers crossed, will become available in the Azure Cloud Shell.
Yep.
Wow.
So in there, everybody who is on Azure will be able to just open the shell and type O365 and be able to use it without any installing any dependencies. Like, it will be just there available. So this is really cool.
Yep.
But yeah, we've done all of the work already over the past month. So there is no more work to do other than to wrap up our release and say, ship it, because we have the docs already. We have to, like, everything is there already. Right. So this week we'll probably get through more.
CLI, you've done all the work already.
With this release. Yes. But so we have a few PRs open around to-dos already. So you will be able to get your list to list your lists, to create lists. So that will come to in the coming days. And yeah, other than that, doing interesting stuff. Like, for example, the other week, again, auth. I managed to get to work and custom connector for Power Platform communicating with API secured with Azure AD B2C. It was harder than you would expect.
Yeah, I think the auth is always the thing. We are definitely investing on the auth side, but I think we need to still make it easier and easier and easier and easier, because that
dogs,
shouldn't yeah. take dogs, that amount
dogs,
of time.
Dogs,
and keeping them up to date. Yes, absolutely.
Because the more you have, the more you work, create.
Well, that's,
so.
Yeah, that's classic challenge as well. So the more you have to maintain them. But anyway, so thank you, Stefan, for joining us for a quick chat today. Good to hear the latest on from your side as well. And thank you, Waldeck, for joining once again. And we'll be back with the new PMP
Weekly. Thank you, Vesta.
Thank you.
Thanks,
we'll
guys.
Be back with the new PMP Weekly within a week. Yay! Something like that. Cheers. Later. Bye-bye.
Yeah, everybody.
Bye-bye.